Blog Talk Radio.
How you doing? This is Sana Gordy, a.k.a. Taino Sagrado. Once again, I'd like to welcome all you live listeners and also the future listeners. This is Taino Radio, Radio Taino. Once again, I'd like to thank everyone, all those countries. Russia, I still see you. You're up and coming there. Oh, he's trying to move up in the charts. But, of course, in number one place is Turtle Island, United States. Canada, I played your song last night. I'd like to give a shout-out to all you Canadian natives, indigenous out there. Man, it's been wonderful seeing the statistics, constantly seeing Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, Quisqueya La Bella, Borinquen, Jamaica. You're creeping up. You're in fourth place. All you Jamaicanos out there who are listening in, thank you so much. Muchas gracias. Ita, taktain, buktaino. How are you doing, everyone out there? Please, I just want everyone to know one thing, and one thing only. On every Saturday, we're going to spotlight different Tainos, I like to call unsung heroes and heroines in the Taino community. And today we have an amazing person I'm going to interview, and her name is Teresa Cuevas. Are you out there, Teresa?
I'm out here, Sana Cori. How are you?
Hey, there we go. Awesome. Thank you. Yes, I'm doing well. Oh, man, I'm excited for this show. I've been meaning to get you on the show for a while. So finally, I got a little organized, and on Saturdays, we're going to be putting people on the spotlight in a way. And you're the first one. You're the first.
Oh, good.
Indigenous Caribbean Boricua woman that's going to be highlighted on this Saturday, February 20th. So how's the weather like on where you live?
It's cold.
I know.
It's cold,
man.
It's still digging out a little bit, you know?
Yeah, this is incredible. You know, yesterday I felt the dampness, you know, when the snow, it's like it hits the bones, you know? I don't know, man.
Yeah.
How about your experience, right?
No, I feel it with my dancer's body. I feel it in my muscles and my bones,
you know,
every so often. So
I was gonna say, this to you the other day. I was with my daughter, and I had to tell her slow down because my legs were like my bones were like. So you as a dancer, I know, man, you feel it, right?
Yeah. Especially if you have injuries or things like that, or any kind of weaknesses in the body. Yeah, you tend to feel it, especially in the cold.
Definitely. Oh, man. And it's like, it's amazing. I remember you, the first one that I spoke to when I got my feet, they were analyzed with, what do you call it? Bone spurs. Oh, was it bone spur?
Mm-hmm.
I forget what it was now.
Yeah,
bone
spur.
Yeah. And it's like, what? So as a dancer, you definitely have to, it's wear and tear, right? On the legs, the feet, the hips.
It's, right? Yeah. Bone spurs are calcifications in the heel, okay, because sometimes our bones calcify and they deposit in certain areas. And sometimes it does happen in the calcaneus, in the bones, in the heel.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's something that's not uncommon, but if not treated, you may have to, God forbid, go to surgery. But, you know, we're hoping for the non-surgery.
Oh, man, look at it. Well, you know, I've been dancing powwows since 96, my first major powwow, I would say. Really 95. And in recent years, when I started doing fancy dancing, my family was always concerned for me because the next day I couldn't walk. Mm-hmm. My feet were like killing me. And I guess that was the precursor to those bone spurs, right? Because I remember I had to walk gently. And it took me like maybe an hour to get my strength back, you know, where it wouldn't hurt. Is that common in dancers?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's common in dancers, especially for those that do a lot of percussive dances and percussive movements. If you dance barefoot and you're heavy on your feet and you don't know how to, you know, pick up your body weight and things like that, yeah, you're going to feel it in the ankles, in the feet, in the knees, in the hips, sometimes in the lower back. So, you know, it's so important to protect and care for your feet.
That is so amazing. You know, in fancy dance or in powwow dancing, you got to wear moccasins. There's no support in those moccasins. There's no support.
Yeah, you may want to put in like a Dr. Scholl's in there.
I know, man. Next time I get out there.
Little cushion.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, Teresa Cueva, now we're talking about dancing and all that. Tell us a little bit about yourself, your origin story, you know? Tell us.
Oh, my origin story.
Well, let me start first. You know what? Let me interrupt you for a second. I'm sorry about that.
Okay.
What island in the Caribbean are you from?
Borinquen, Puerto Rico.
All right. So we're starting in Borinquen. There we go. So continue. Go for it.
Share with us.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Well, for everyone who is not familiar with me, my name is Teresa Cuevas, and I am a classically trained ballet and contemporary dancer. I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and then attended the Professional Performing Arts High School in New York City. And I then moved on to Hunter College, where I pursued my degree in dance education. And I have been blessed enough to dance on every major stage here in the city before I was 30.
Whoa.
So that was,
I didn't know that
was a lot of fun. Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa. Wait. Wait, let's slow it down here a minute. Wait a minute. Hold on.
Okay.
So classical is the ballerina, you said? Ballet, I should say? Or?
Yes, ballet.
Wow, that's intense because you got to wear those shoes, right?
Yes.
Oh, man. The metal toe point shoes, right? It's like metal in the bottom there?
Yeah.
Like that.
It's a box of wood.
Jeez.
So, yeah. Your feet are very prone to scrapes and bruises and cuts and, you know, skin coming off.
Man.
That's always the best.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. So you've been in some wars, some battles out there.
Yeah, my poor feet have been in wars. Yeah.
So you dance as in ballet in every major venue here in the city, you said, in the dance?
Yeah, well, I've done contemporary. Contemporary dance.
Okay.
Yeah, I've done a lot of contemporary dance, and that's basically what I've performed on pretty much every major stage here in the city.
Wow.
I've been really blessed and lucky in that way.
Wow. What's the best venue that you for you that you perform that really you enjoy doing? Like,
oh,
what stands
boy.
Out?
Mm-hmm.
I know, it's a lot, right?
For me, it's hard. You know what? I loved the Joyce Theater because it's known for contemporary performances and many different kind of cultural performances. So that's in Chelsea. That
nice.
Was amazing. I was at City Center, and we opened up Fall for Dance. When Fall for Dance was pretty new, we opened up, and I mean, it was absolutely tremendous. I mean, just seeing the, not necessarily seeing the audience members, but knowing that you were performing in front of tier after tier after tier, you know, it was great. It was great. I had a lot of fun with that. We also performed at Lincoln Center. So that was fun. We also did jazz at Lincoln Center. That was a lot of fun, like around Columbus Circle. So, yeah. I had the distinct pleasure of doing all of that stuff before I was 30.
No, that is so cool. So continue your journey there. So wow, you got the contemporary, the classic. Continue.
So in 2009, I became the artistic director of the Indo-Rican Multicultural Dance Project. And we're a nonprofit company that brings lectures and performances and drum circles and dance education into our communities. We believe that education truly is the key for worldly accord. And we have presented concerts of various cultural backgrounds. And we take pride in making dance tangible for everyone, from classrooms to great concert halls. So that's part of our mission statement.
Yeah, no, that is, you know what, I'm taking some notes here. Can you repeat that again, that mission? Can you repeat that again? There's something that stood out there that I want to highlight. Go ahead.
So, of course, we're a nonprofit dance company that brings lectures, performances, drum circles, and dance education into our community. So we believe that education truly is the key for worldly accord. And we have presented concerts of various cultural backgrounds. And we take pride in making dance tangible for everyone, from classrooms to great concert halls.
That
so
is amazing.
We're not that kind of dance company where it's like, oh, we're not performing in a certain, you know, site or area. You know, well, we won't do that. No, we take it to our people. We take it to our communities. You know, we've taken our pieces to ESL schools where they do not have access to pay a certain amount of money to visit, you know, theaters and certain places like that. So we launch out into the community and present it for them.
Definitely. That's amazing. That's grassroots right there, and also on a professional level. Where you bringing this is what they call very much in touch of our indigenous roots, as you know, community outreach, education, getting people involved. What's the origin of the word Indo-Rican? Tell me about that. Yeah. Let's break it down.
So the word Indo-Rican comes from a very, very special place for me. Okay, so it not only represents our Caribbean and Northern brothers and sisters, but it also represents the South Asian community as well. Because a lot of people may not know this, but for me, Bollywood paid the bills for many years.
What?
You know, and yes. Okay, so this is to testify that if you have a good background in dance and good training, you can do absolutely anything. So, the South Asian community welcomes me with open arms, and I will forever be grateful to my South Asian family for accepting me and teaching me so much about their customs and cultures. And, you know, I've gotten to travel and tour with them, and it was so much fun, and I learned so much, and they were so warm, and they reminded me of my own people, you know, and I believe that there is a common thread. Yes, I believe there is a common thread between South Asians and our Caribbean Indians, our Caribbean people.
Well, they're the original Indios, right? That's the thing we think.
Yeah, they are.
Columbus got that confused, you know, but you're absolutely correct.
Yes, they are.
Wow, so there you go. So, interesting connection. So, I know whenever I meet people from, you know, the Eastern India, very similar to indigenous. I mean, they are, for me personally, I think they definitely are indigenous people. Their traditions, their customs, the family, you know, marriage and so on. It's very rooted. You know, the rituals, indigenous. So whenever I gather with people like, you know, East Indian, whatever, I always feel at home. You know?
Yes, absolutely. I feel the same way.
And the best part, I love it. I remember not too long ago, I was invited and I was eating with my hands. It was because they get tradition to eat with their hands. I'm like, oh yeah, this is it, man. Can't get more real than that, you know? So, man, I'm excited. So, so what's your experiences with different nationalities as a dancer and also organizing dance? What's your experience? Is it more difficult than working with your own culture, or is it, you know, if you could expand that a
not
little bit.
Not at all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, not at all. I mean, my company has produced in so many different ways. We have produced off Broadway several times. We've gone into parks. We've gone into senior centers. We've gone into schools. And I don't find it hard working with other cultures at all. I believe I'm one of the few that represents multiculturalism in New York City. Okay,
that is
so
amazing.
Yeah, when I produce large concerts, I make it a point to showcase not only my indigenous roots, but I have Kathak dancers. I have who else have I had? I've had belly dancers. I've had hip hop because hip hop is a culture. I've had African dancers. I've had, you know, many, many different groups join me on these beautiful stages. And we just all come together. And you know what? Everyone just wants a voice. They just want to be heard. And I provide that platform for dancers and other people who may not get the chance to work on a certain caliber of stage, you know? So, yeah, I don't find it hard at all. I think people, you know, dancers, they're hungry and they want to perform and they want to show their art and showcase themselves. I've had Asian dancers, the Chinese sword dancing, that was gorgeous, you know?
Wow.
And and I think people appreciate it because it's movement that everyone can really relate to, you know, because ballet is beautiful and for what it is. It's beautiful and, you know, it's very European and there's certain methods of ballet. But, you know, how many people can, you know, chasse, pas de bourrée, arabesque, you know, tour and things like that, all the way across the floor? And some people may feel a little singled out about it. But if you bring more pedestrian movements or cultural movements on a stage, I think people can relate to that more and say, you know what, I can do that. You know, so I make it a choice,
amazing,
a conscious choice to represent multiculturalism in the performing arts in New York City.
Wow, that's amazing. You know, many years ago, I had an experience. I was invited to Union Theological Seminary to give a prayer, indigenous prayer in the Taino way. And I had my, I had a drum. I had my mayawaka, a little one, And then there was a whole bunch of different traditions were there. And there was one group called, it was a traditional Korean drum troupe, you know. And they had their traditional regalia. And so they had invited the drummers to come. I wish William was there, but we had the William Ruiz. But they had invited us. And so they gave me a beat, you know, they were playing their beat. And we, they couldn't understand me. I couldn't understand them. But we understood each other through the beats. and then the Africans were there, and so we all played together. But it was through music that we were talking to each other, and that was like, man, you can't beat music. It's the most beautiful language in the world, right? Music. Then they had the dancers there. Yep, they had the dancers there. This wasn't planned. It was spur of the moment, and it was amazing how we created this music, the drumming, the dancers followed the drum, all these different traditions, these cultures. You know, I loved it. It was amazing. Well, let me ask you a question. What is your connection to the Taino or the indigenous Caribbean culture, Puerto Rico?
Well, yeah, as far as my Taino connections. As a kid, my mom always exposed me to different cultures, you know, and we would go to powwows every summer. And there was this one powwow that we attended where the drums were playing and the grand entry began. And even before we were anywhere near the drums, my mom, my aunt, and I just started to cry, you know, and it was as if the drums were calling us, you know, and it was touching my soul in a way that I just couldn't explain. You know, Lewis, I think you know how you feel when you hear drums. Doesn't it stir something up in you?
Oh man. I mean, you can be in pain, you can be tired, all of a sudden, boom, you're like supersonic, you know? The heart, you know? Your heart. Your spirit lightens up, right?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. And so, you feel your ancestors,
Yeah, and that, like, I didn't understand that because I was so young at the time, you know. So I started to do some research, and I knew that I wasn't from the First Nation, from the mainland, you know, because my mom was Puerto Rican, my dad's Puerto Rican, you know, and that's how we identified. And I started reading about the First Nations in Puerto Rico. And for me, it was a time of self-discovery, you know, as well as sorrow.
Beautiful. Sorrow in what way?
Because I started to uncover our history. And it was heartbreaking for me to know that, you know, our people and many other people have the same experiences. You know, from history.
Interesting. Exactly. Yep. Exactly. Well, you know, you hit the nail right there. Indigenous people in history have often been oppressed, you know, genocide campaigns. To this day, you know, indigenous people are on the front lines. But why is that thing? Like when you started discovering that and the sorrow set in, let me ask you this. What was your response? Like,
oof.
What was your response to that?
I mean, it was all in my gut, you know, and I was happy to find out that I was part of a First Nations group. You know, and I was really excited about that. I found my people and, you know, but the history of the Tainos was pretty hard to digest. And I started picking up books and reading them on the train. And I would have to stop reading because I would feel myself like well up with tears and my heart would break on the train. And I was just like, I can't do this on the train right now, you know?
Yeah, sure,
so,
sure.
Yeah, and I felt like I needed to educate myself in this area because some people believe that Tainos are a forgotten people, and that's a philosophy that some people hold, but I don't necessarily believe that. And, you know, I took it upon myself to educate myself and read and research as much as I can.
Right.
So, and that's where the spark came.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Beautiful. You know, I remember many years ago, because I definitely relate with you, and, you know, I was big into the church. I was studying to be a priest.
Mm-hmm.
I already had to finish my theological studies, ready to graduate.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to do what they call like a thesis kind of thing. And so someone suggested you should read up on Bartolomé de las Casas, you know. And I'm like, oh, where? I mean, I knew about the atrocities, but not so, you know, not so deep.
Yes.
So I got access to all these books, to all his works. I got access to, and whoa, something just hit me like a ton of bricks. Reading story after story of atrocities, you know, and what the Glassas try to do, and his limitations, and then when the church. And I said, guess what? I can't be a priest, man. I cannot.
Mm-hmm.
I came so close, but because of the La Casas, I was like, I can't do this. I can't represent this. No way. And then that's when my whole journey in the Taino way really blossomed. Like, I had to start all over again, you know? I had to literally start all over again. So I definitely, that sorrow, we all go through that path, you know, when we have to embrace that that trauma, right? And it's in us, right? It comes out, right? The trauma.
Yeah, yes, yes.
And it's just like, and then we find this way. Now, I met you through Taino Rain. Can you tell us about Taino Rain?
Oh, my goodness. Uh-huh. Yeah, we're going back into time.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, so my mind was always wrapped around dance and dance education. And I've been teaching since I was 16 years old, whether I was in a local studio or, you know, working with special needs kids, I was always teaching. So, once again, I was always teaching dance. So as I started to read about the Taino history, I began to wonder if anyone had ever dedicated or decided to create a piece, a movement piece on the Tainos in any capacity. And at this point, I did not have one Taino friend that identified as Taino. I was like a lone person.
I know,
you know?
It's always,
it was like,
it's like the only one left, right? You feel like the only one left.
Yes. And it was like, okay, me and Google, me and YouTube, you know, me and the book. And I tried looking online, but I really couldn't find anything significant. So, and like I said, I didn't know anybody in the community as well. So I didn't have anyone to talk to, but an idea started to form in my mind. And I saw an organization advertise on dancenyc.org.
Okay.
And they were looking to produce new works. And it had certain speculations, like it had to be a certain length, you know, things like that.
Interesting.
And I said to myself, well, what do I have to lose? And on a whim, I submitted the paperwork for my idea, Taino Rain. Now, Taino Rain is the creation story of the Tainos and how they developed as a society and how they dealt with the rise of colonization on the island.
There you go.
And, and I didn't think I was going to get the grant. And I had people telling me that I wasn't going to get the grant. And guess what? I got the grant.
Wow. There you go.
I got the grant. And congratulations. I tell you, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it was.
I didn't know that. Go ahead.
It was crazy. Yeah, I was so incredibly nervous, you know, and I felt like I was stepping into something exciting and scary, and I wanted to honor my ancestors, and I placed a lot of pressure on myself. You know, I needed to find the right music and the right movements, and especially the right dancers who could emote and portray, like, the characters that I needed for them to play. You know, I didn't mind so much that they weren't from a Hispanic background. I was like, I need people who are going to fill the roles the best. You know, so I had a multicultural cast, you know, and I would choreograph and create in my room and listen to music and cry because some of the movements were so sacred to me.
Wow.
And once again, these are things that I've never experienced before. Like, you know, when you're a dancer and you just create for a classroom setting, that's one thing. But you're in a room by yourself with certain music and you're concentrating on something and you want it to be good. The movement did not come from me.
Right.
And that's all I have to say. You know, maybe it was the ancestors.
I don't know, but I was going through. It's the vision.
You know,
I was going through. You received those visions for dance, huh?
Yeah. It was real. It was real. And it was, you know, these movements were sacred to me, and I had to create the costumes. I had to create the props, and it wasn't a small task. You know, mm-hmm. it had to be like a 35-minute production with seven dancers, and it was, thank goodness, where we presented it. It was well-received for the first time going on stage, and then I presented the piece. Yeah, then I presented the piece off-Broadway, and I received another grant to present it at Inwood Park. So that's like the origins of like Crying O'Rain.
And you know, Inwood Park, Shiraka Park, I think I mentioned this to you, was the home of the mm-hmm. the Lenape or Ramapo. I mean, they're descendants of the Ramapo, and also Lenape live in Oklahoma now. But our mm-hmm. people were there. Our people passed mm-hmm. through there for generations and generations and generations. And they have the oral tradition of the islanders, the Arawak, local islanders coming up there, yes. bringing tobacco. And here's the key. We came back. Mm-hmm. We came back
yes,
to Shiraka Park. We came back to Inwood. That was historical, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I don't know if I told you that, but that was a historical event because Taino is once again, you know, expressing itself right there. Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yes. And I was concerned. I was so concerned about the off-Broadway went well, but then when we got the grant to do it at Inwood Park, like I was concerned for my dancers and their well-being, their feet, you know, things like that. Yeah, because it was an all grassy area. We had the beautiful background of the water, you know. It was amazing. It was amazing. And, you know, it was once again received very well. And we had amazing supporting staff. And, you know, you remember.
Hey, I was privileged enough to be there. Yeah, I got a... Wow, that was amazing. I get to wear my regalia, the headdress. Yeah, it was fun. It was awesome. I tell you. But now, what was that? That was the Taino Rain, right? The Taino Rain performance.
That was Taino Rain.
First time. Yeah, that's yeah. You know that there's a part in Taino Rain where the Spaniard comes out with the African
yes.
tied up, and then one of your dancers comes out. She was like mm-hmm. the trickster, the youthful innocence, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god!
Yes.
Oh my
yes.
god!
Like the,
and then
yes.
like, and then she's like going into the chaos, confronting the chaos of slavery
yes.
and so on.
Yeah.
And I know when I first saw that on stage, I was like, my intergenerational trauma was like ignited. I was like, ah.
Yes.
I want to kill that guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then she dies, right? She dies. She gets killed.
Yes.
So that woke up like, oh, shoot, you know? And I know that you hear a hush in the crowd, you know? You always get that hush in the crowd. Right? Like, oh,
yes. Yeah.
That wakes it up. That wakes you up.
Yeah.
Huh?
Choreographing that's another
yeah.
part when, you know, because – When it's your baby, when it's your project, and you're
uh-huh.
so close to it, uh-huh. you know, you have certain emotions that go along yeah. with that. Part of you is on stage too, but you have to allow the dancers to take over the roles and stuff like that. And I get the same reaction all the time. And it's
wow.
from people from different cultural backgrounds, you know, because they get invested in the characters. And
yeah.
the little one is very, you know, cute and playful. And you can say,
yeah.
hey,
yeah.
I have somebody like that in my family.
Definitely,
you know, that little pain
yeah.
in the butt that's always following me around.
Yeah, Juan Bobo también,
you know?
Juan Bobo tradition, you know, like, wow. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Oh. And then she sees, like, she grows as a person. You know, she becomes
yeah.
mature during the course of Taino Rain. And
yeah.
you can see that she sees, like, when the African is tied, she's like, this is not right. She's
yeah,
like,
that's
something
wrong.
Is wrong. I can't put my hand on it, but something is not right. And then,
exactly.
you know, she gets involved and unfortunately pays the price.
Wow.
Because she, you know, yeah.
Yeah, and
but,
and that's that's our history. Hey, we've been living here for, as we know now, you know, history now, 7,000 years. We're living harmoniously. You know, we have some issues sometimes, but hey, we're doing our thing. All of a sudden, these bullies show up. And not only do they show up, but they start enslaving people. You know, I can imagine the emotions that went through our people at the time.
Yeah.
Like what the word? You know, and I know the Spaniards, historically the Spaniards, they try their best to see we have a slave system, you know, but we didn't have a slavery system. So that in itself was a shock, you know, like, what's going on here? What are you doing? You know?
Yeah.
So I could imagine.
Yeah.
That.
And I mean, going back to the reactions that we've had with people and this piece. We took it to an ESL school, English as a Second Language school, and we were in a tiny classroom, but you know what? We made it work with the props and the cocoon and the baskets and the this and the that and the ropes, and we made it work. We had 40 people sitting and standing and flushed out watching, you know, this piece. And at the end, they had the opportunity to practice their English on us. And so we spoke about where we're from, because everyone there wasn't originally from Brooklyn, New York. You know, they were from various parts of the world, you know, and they were taking language courses. So, you know, I said, you know, I'm so-and-so. And all of my dancers, they were like, I'm from Japan, I'm from Italy, I'm from this, I'm from that. And when we started the lecture portion of the piece, and my Spaniard, my colonizer, I love him, he was like, he's a sweetheart, but he was like, why do I always got to play the bad guy, man? I don't want to play the bad guy. I said, listen, I was like, you are super important. I know that this hits your heart because, once again, he's from a different country. He's not from Brooklyn, New York. And when we went to the ESL school, one of the teachers said, who is this? And pointed to the dancer, the actor, Lewis. And someone said, the man. And they said, well, what man? And they were like, the bad man. Oh my goodness. I think it really hurt his heart. And I was like, listen, you're just a fantastic actor. I know you're not this person, but you're just a great actor. And so he was like, fine. he did a really great job.
Wow. Yeah, no, I remember that. That was deep, man. We gotta bring it back, man. Taino Rain. You know?
Yeah, yeah. I'd love to do it. I'd love to do it again.
You know, there's a historical figure in the Taino tradition from Haiti to Cuba about Cacique Hatue.
Mm-hmm.
And Cacique Hatue has a wonderful history of resistance. And, you know, I will love, I want to challenge you. I would love to see a dance thing for Cacique Hatue, who was burned at the stake for trying to defend his people. That would be an amazing story, you know, to do a dance thing for that. Cacique Hatue.
Yeah.
You know, one of our heroes. But, wow. We got to talk about that. I got some ideas. I just thought about it now. Well, let me ask you, Taino Rain. Now, talk a little bit about the Taino Calling song. About that one. It was a recent.
So Taino Calling Song, once again, started because I first heard the music on YouTube, and I looked up the creator, and I was like, who is this? Who's making this music? And who is it? Sanacori Ramos. I was like, of course. I was like, who else would it be? So
that's right, Taino.
I spoke to you once again, and I was like, so can we maybe use your music for something? And Yeah, I saw a call for submissions for cultural pieces through the Asim Kala Initiative. Now, the Asim Kala Initiative is an organization of doctors and classical dancers. So they're doctors, but they moonlight as dancers. And they're trying to create a common thread between dance and medicine.
Wow.
So that's the initiative. So I submitted my idea for Taino Calling Song, and I received the grant. So Taino Calling Song is a, it was a lot of fun. I mean, we've taken it everywhere. The Taino Calling Song is a ritualistic folk dance that represents the indigenous people of Puerto Rico and healing through dance, you know? And we've gotten quite a few grants to perform this piece along with, you know, drum circles for several communities. We've performed Taino Calling Song at Dixon Place, which is, you know, one of the major stages here in the city. A beautiful space. And we opened up that concert, and that was, I mean, a blessing. I loved it. We performed it at the Hudson Guild. We performed it at Penn South, Fort Tryon Park, Lexington School for the Deaf. That was amazing. So Lexington School for the Deaf is a, it's a school in Queens that helps kids that have that are deaf or have hearing disabilities from like 0 to about 21 years old. And they're all there. And they packed into the auditorium and they got to see a Taino Calling Song, and they got to, you know, play the drums each class, and they felt the vibrations of the drums. And
that was a great day.
Yeah, they were so warm and welcoming, and we really had a good time. But now because, you know, we're going through COVID and pretty much everyone is in quarantine, we now perform virtually via Zoom. So we performed for Public School 173, and we also had a free public performance. And the last public performance was February 6, 2021. And that was a lot of fun, too.
So. Yeah, it's amazing how they pulled this off through media, you know, through Zoom and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's the signs of the times. You got to adjust, right? Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough when kind of technology is not your thing.
Yeah.
You know, but we've had to learn and adapt and tweak and polish. And so, you know what? I'm glad that I am still functioning, you know, and still working as a community based project and just helping bring dance education, drumming, art, something fun for everyone. Yeah, because it's not just for kids. We had, you know, senior citizens. We've had people of multiple abilities joining us for these programs. So, you know, it's been amazing. It's been amazing.
Yeah, and I love the part where you try to teach the people to dance. That's powerful. You know, and I see the people get into it. You know, they feel it. You know, that's amazing. I know the first time when we did it in 2019, when when Dr. Melendez came, wow, that was powerful because you guys performed it, I think, in a Taino community setting, you know, where people understood it. And that was very, very powerful. Yeah, that was powerful, Dan. That was one of my highlights ceremonially of having you guys perform Taino Rain in a dance form, you know, ceremonial.
Mm-hmm.
Dance form, and I was like, whoa, that's so beautiful, you know. I always remember that. And Yade was so happy, you know, the late Yade Melendez, she was very happy about that. Remember that day? I'm going to post some pictures of that. I just found some old photos of that. One of my Google photos, it was weird, you know, like I didn't even know I had it in Google Photos, like backed up. And I'm like, yo, what is this? 2019. I'm like, whoa, I got a group shot of everyone. So what I'll do is I'll post it. If you want, I could post it on your timeline. If Facebook.
Of course.
I could post it on Taino Radio on Facebook. And yeah. Put it on the website too, tainoradio.com, so people can see the history, you know, like, wow. So that was powerful. That was powerful.
That was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah, man. And oh, I forgot to tell you too about Taino Rain. When I first went to your show, what? I believe it was a fancy dance. I was doing a fancy dance, I think I was.
Yes.
But most of the music you used that day for Taino Rain was Edward Cedeno's music. And he
all
taught me.
All of it was pretty much.
Yeah, he taught me the songs and he taught me how to drum. So that was my old teacher. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I felt his spirit was there, you know, like his legacy. that was amazing, you know.
Yeah, I know that we spoke after the concert, and you were like, that's Edwin Cedeno. And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
I was like, do you know him? Because as far as, you know, performances and respect, if you're going to use someone's music, you have to – I always ask for permission, and I try to contact them via email. If I can get any information from them online, I try to contact them to say, listen, is it okay if I use your music? And I couldn't find him until I met you, and unfortunately you told me, you know, about certain health issues that he was having.
Yeah,
so
he was very
I was like,
sick.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, and I was like, that's why I can't find him, you know, but... You know, he was there. He'll always be there.
And it's funny because I went to see him when he was, nearing the end of his life, and I told him about it. Yo, man, we're using his song, Taino Rain. You know, I told him about it, and he just smiled. He was so happy, you know. So he got to know that Taino Rain does use his music. He was happy. He was happy. He was like, oh, you know. He couldn't talk much, but it brought a smile to his face, you know. So, but you know what? Let's take a little pause and let's go back to memory lane, Taino Rain. I got a song that you use in Taino Rain, and that's the medicine song.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Dang.
kid, man, Edward St. Daniel.
Amazing,
right? You brought me back. You know what's funny? He mixed all those instruments. He played all those instruments that you hear, and he mixed it together. The mixer went on. It's amazing. All the music in that CD, he played it. And they mixed it all in. That's incredible. He was a great man, you know? And I know he was happy that his songs still continue on, you know? But it brings you back, right? The memories, right?
Yes, of course. Oof, yeah. I believe we used that for the harvest. You know, when they were harvesting and they were gathering everything and, you know, the time of harvest in Taino rain.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. That's right. Yes, the harvest. And, you know, plant medicine, you know, the plant, the medicine person always dealt with the plant. So that was so appropriate. Wow, man, that's some good stuff. That's some good stuff. So you see, even when distances, illness, music manages to find music. Dance manages to find music, right? To keep the flow going. Yeah, so that is great. That's great. So I think it's important that, you know, you continue doing your good works there. Do you have any future projects you're working on? Or?
I have a few projects. The first one that's coming up, I'll be a guest on a podcast called Table for Four. I'll be talking about the rise of the African influence in Puerto Rico.
What?
So, yes, yes. And you can find Table for Four on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok and Google Podcasts. So that's something that I'm working on, lectures. I also have donation based. Pay whatever you wish, dance and fitness classes for senior citizens throughout the week via Zoom. So whoever's interested, they can check out my website at www.indoricandance.com. And as far as future projects that are going to be shown to the public, as far as dance and performances and things like that, I have certain ideas. I don't talk about them until they are fully fleshed out and I have a concrete idea of what I'll be presenting. But I'm sure something is coming down the pipeline because I have all these different thoughts and ideas. And, you know, I miss engaging with the community. And even though we can't be together, you know, face to face, I'll do whatever I can to do it via Zoom or something like that. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's been a time of producing and, you know, getting through, of course, the quarantine. But, you know, I'll be moving back into the realm of dance and producing that stuff hopefully soon.
That is wonderful. Have you ever heard of a North American singer from the Tao Pueblo Indians? His name is Miraba. Have you heard of that? Miraba?
I think so. Sounds familiar.
Carlos Miraba? Yeah, well, you know, he has a song called The Dance, and he talks about that when he gets together with the elders, they always talk about, you know, they talk about the traditions, you know, the grandpa, grandma, pa. And it said that one of the ways they kept their traditions alive through the years, especially during, you know, reservations when they were first formed, was through the dance, you know, the songs and the dance. That's what kept them alive. That's what kept them going from going crazy, you know, and from committing suicides was the dance. So he has a beautiful, band that it's, when he performs on stage, he's always has dancers, you know. He always has dancers and, you know, various traditional instruments with modern instruments. And so, you know, so I see Indo Rican, I see a lot of similarities in Indo Rican dance, you know, company, and Carlos Miraba. So, you know what, I'll send you a video of one of his concerts. It's called The Dance. Just amazing, you know.
Okay.
So. Yeah, so I think it's wonderful what you're doing. I think it's, especially as a woman, you know, a lot of a lot of our indigenous communities in a Taino way. You know, it seems like mm-hmm. that matriarchal spirit has kind of like, I think it's catching steam now, but overall
okay.
we're very male dominant, you know? So I think it's important. Women like yourself are taking this lead, you know? It's very important because we're a matriarchal society, you know? And even though
yes.
we had guys who were males at the time of the invasion, but it was the women that appointed them, or it was the women that directed them, you know, the elders. So,
mm-hmm.
so we definitely have to really port that as a people, you know, to empower the women. So what you're doing is amazing. So I think it's keep it up, don't give up, don't stop, right? and I don't think you will. I don't think that's even
that's
your mindset,
right?
right? I don't
yeah.
think it's in your
yeah,
mindset.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I like to, you know, anyone who's listening or who's downloading this show, you know, is there a way they can contact you if they want to learn dance, if they want to maybe be part of the group or something, or maybe they're dancers? Is there any way they can reach you?
Yes, absolutely. They can contact me through my website.
Uh-huh.
Which is www.indorican.dance, I-N-D-O-R-I-C-A-N, dance, dance.com, or they can reach me via email at indorican@live.com.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. And always, you know, I'll put your stuff up on tainoradio.com.
Oh,
people
thank
could
you.
Click on
mm-hmm.
that. Yeah, man. If you have any videos, I'll post them up too, you know, so... Well, we got
okay.
90
seconds. Yeah, I can
always send it to me. Okay, cool. We got 90 seconds left. Look, time flies, right? Time
yes.
super flies. Now, there was one song I wanted to close the show with. This is a group of women from Brazil, okay? And this mm-hmm. is like a traditional young women's song. It's a young women's song. So
mm-hmm.
so this was Indo-Rican back in the day. It's like a traditional
yes.
song.
Yes.
All right? So I'll end the show
with
this.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, man. I want to welcome you back, all right? If we do an African
oh,
thing,
sure.
too, I want to get you back, all right? You know?
Okay.
All right, cool. So listen, take care. Bon matin. Thank you for being on the show. And thank you, listeners. Thank you, future downloaders. I'll see you soon.
Thanks.
Right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Take care. Thank you.